The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So do you remember the name James Damore? James Damore was the senior software engineer at Google. He was fired last August for his internal memo that was titled Google's Ideological Echo Chamber. In this, he criticized the diversity policies of Google. He said that they actually result in reverse discrimination and suppress conservative political points of view. The media jumped on this. It got all kinds of attention at the time, mainly because Damore's memo was painted as, yes, anti-diverse and sexist. So Damore dared to point out that men and women have biological and personality differences that might account for different professional and personal priorities. What a Neanderthal! Grab the club! He said that Google's culture of bias included programs, mentoring, and classes only for people with a certain gender or race, and that they prioritized diversity candidates. Well, Google didn't like that much, and so they fired him. Ridiculous overreaction by Google, and really fascistic in nature. By firing Damore, Google basically confirmed, yeah, you can't speak out if you have a different opinion. No one at Google, no one in the media seemed to appreciate the respectful, well-reasoned arguments that he made in his memo. Nobody seemed to appreciate that. He was just a Neanderthal. They only had blind rage towards his discussion of gender. It couldn't be heard. Well, he's now fighting back. Yesterday, he filed a class action lawsuit against Google, and here's his claim. You don't hear this every day. He said, Google unfairly discriminates against white men who have perceived conservative political views that are unpopular with its executives. Another Google employee, David Grudman, joined Damore in the lawsuit, and they're going for the throat. The suit alleges that Google uses, quote, illegal hiring quotas to fill its desired percentages of women and favored minority candidates, end quote, and that, quote, the presence of Caucasians and males is mocked with boos during company-wide weekly meetings, end quote. Google's unhinged response to the Damore memo is the end result of progressive extremism. When you promote diversity as the end all, the be all of all of your virtues, and then you fire somebody for actually being diverse, I don't know if you noticed this, but you violate your own ultimate virtue. It's hypocrisy. You people should stay away from designing any kind of AI. Now, I say this, and I can say this, because currently at my workplace, I won't get fired for saying it.
It's Tuesday, January 9th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I don't think people understand the word diversity. We if we want to be diverse, then we have to listen to reasoned arguments that we disagree with. We have to have people present all kinds of different options, but nobody's really interested in that anymore. It's one way, either left or right. It's one way, and it cannot be anything other than that one way. And if you don't agree with it 100%, there's something wrong with you. You're a traitor. You're a sellout, whatever it is. How did we get here?
Yes, incredible anger if you hear that opposite opinion. I don't understand it. I mean, it's how do you form your opinions if you're only hearing one side of an equation and everything else
that's
you consider
indoctrination.
Hateful? Yeah, it's indoctrination.
And quite honestly, how many of us have read the Michael Wolff book?
I mean, we have.
We have.
That's our job. I don't know that I would if I didn't work here, right? I mean, like, I don't know that I would be interested in it.
I would hope that I would. I don't know if I'd be interested. If I cared about politics, I would hope that I would.
It's just such a spectacle, you know. I mean, I guess I would want to know for myself what was real and what wasn't.
We have to. We learned a lot in it, and it had nothing to do with Trump. It had nothing to do with Trump. We learned a lot by reading it. And it if you're not making yourself uncomfortable, then you're not growing.
Right. I mean, you know, there are times where indoctrination is important. For example, you know, I've indoctrinated my children to be Philadelphia Eagles fans.
Right.
And when they walk through the grocery store, they see someone with a Dallas Cowboy shirt on. They look at me and they say, "Ew, Dad, yucky." I have them to the point where they think it's a visible scar to see that stupid star on a shirt. That's how hard I've worked at that. That's indoctrination. That's not good for everything. You don't want to do that when it comes to politics. You don't want to do that. Now, with the Eagles, obviously, you do want to do it. But in other parts of your life, that's not a good approach.
You know, one of the reasons why I think we lose our children in faith is we don't allow them to discover it themselves. We just tell them this is the way it is, and we're going to church, and you're going to do this, and this is what we believe. We need to foster questions. We need to. I want my children. I had a really hard time getting my children into a school, into a Christian school, because we're Mormons, and God forbid you have a Mormon. And I even went to the leadership of these schools that were turning us down. I said, I don't want you to teach my doctrine. They get my doctrine at home. They get my doctrine at church. I want you to teach what you teach, because it will form questions in their minds. And I want them to have questions.
And the questions come anyway.
Right.
Like, they're individual people.
Here's what happens. You're not prepared when you go out. For instance, I did my daughters a grave disservice, and I learned this from Hannah, by just focusing on all of the good things of America. Because when she got out and she heard about all the bad things, she no longer trusted me. She was like, "Well, Dad, you don't know the bad things." And she was kind of right. I didn't. Now I can tell my daughters and my children the worst that we have done. And I focus on that. Here's the bad things that this country has done. Learn these things. Now learn the times that we have been tremendous and try to find those places elsewhere. You don't. You don't find those moments elsewhere. Why? Because there's something special, and it's always a balance. It's always trying to make sure that your ego, your humility is in check, that you're doing it for the right reason. Your kids are not going to be prepared to go out into the world if you haven't already challenged them every step of the way. Why is this true? Why do you believe that? If you haven't played devil's advocate with your kid and really push them up against the wall and said, well, what about this? How would you argue about this? People think, well, they're going to get that outside. They need that in here. They need it in a safe zone with you. Otherwise, they're going to get lost. And, you know, I started this with, how did we get here? Stupidity. Self-imposed ignorance, a lack of a desire to even think for yourself, the lack of teaching critical thinking. Listen to this. These are the Antifa protesters. Okay, Antifa, anti-fascist. How do you define fascism? This is really not a hard question, especially if you've taken the time to get into your car or gone in the subway or the bus to go to some place, and you're standing there as somebody who is anti-fascist. How do you define fascism? Listen.
How would you define what fascism is? I don't know. Okay. How would you define fascism?
It's not an easy thing to define.
How would you define fascism?
I don't really want to get into all of that history and
Does
stuff.
Does that mean you can't define it, though?
I don't want to talk about it right now.
Fascist ideas.
And how would you define fascism?
People that are here to celebrate fascism and white supremacy.
And how would you define fascism?
Fascism is an increasingly upward, hierarchical model that puts white people and European people at the top.
No, that's not fascism. That's one kind of fascism. That's not fascism. Fascism is silencing all those that have a differing opinion of those who are in the group. However big the group is. Remember, the Nazis didn't start out at the majority. The Nazis didn't end up being in the majority. The Nazis, the real Nazis, were only about 30% of Germany. So it doesn't have to be majority. It just has to be a big enough block to be a bully to say, my way or the highway. You will all conform to whatever it is I think. Now, that can be done religiously. That can be done with atheists. That can be done with people who say, I want to burn all the fossils. I want to dig up and bring back to life dinosaurs and then shove them into a combustion engine just because I know they'll hurt the earth. They can be fascists as well as the hug a tree person. It's my way or the highway, and I am going to gather up enough strength, either through a fear of the mob or the mob becoming the power structure. I'm going to enforce my way on everyone. And if they don't comply, I destroy them. That is fascism. Kind of sounds, in some ways, like working at Google.
It's a right-wing movement, though, as we've all learned from our history books.
No,
fascism, big right-wing movement.
No, the left.
Just checking your math there. A definition of fascism, Merriam-Webster Dictionary. A political philosophy, movement, or regime that exalts nation and often race above the individual and stands for centralized autocratic government headed by a dictatorial leader, severe economic and social regimentation, and forcible suppression of opposition. How Earth is that translated as a right-wing movement? An autocratic government that's centralized.
It can be if you're talking about Steve Bannon.
I don't think it can be.
He wants centralized.
Right, but that is not a conservative philosophy.
Oh, no, I know that.
Yeah.
But if you define conservative as Steve Bannon, which most people on the left do.
And most people, you know, in America do at this point. I think we've just lost those definitions.
Yeah.
Over the years, did how many chalkboards where we showed the difference between the European model of left and right
American.
And the American model of left and right? And
it's not the same.
Right now, I think even in America, we adopt that left-wing
yes,
model.
Yes, we do.
There's no option, really, for smaller government
right.
in many ways.
For real freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's going to change.
Yeah, that was one of your predictions,
it
by
is.
The way, glenbeck.com. You can check them all today. The political predictions are up. You can vote on which one you think is going to come true. One of them was based on the freedom movement. It's actually, I think, in first place right now. People think that there's going to be a renaissance of that freedom movement here and abroad. Hope that's true.
Well, you're seeing it in places like Iran. And the Iran thing we'll get into, later this week in predictions. The Iran thing is really fascinating on how that's happening and why that's happening. So.
Glenn Beck.
So do you remember the name Amy Fabrini? They're from Redmond, Oregon. Amy was the young girl who, if you listened to the interview with her, she sounded perfectly fine, perfectly normal. She was deemed by the state to have too low of an IQ to be able to keep her children. Well, they took her son from her after birth at the hospital, and 10 months now have gone by. Some good news happened over the holiday. The Blaze ran the story, quote, essentially the state doesn't have to prove anything definite to take away the child. The argument is that they are going by the expert's recommendation for what's best in this case, because something just could happen. However, the judge ruled differently, and the judge said, no, I don't think so. They both have high school diplomas, and doesn't matter what the state says. They cannot seize their children. They cannot take your children away. If you're in the child protection business, then everything looks like a danger. You always think the worst could happen. And they've returned the 10-month-old now to Amy and is back home. Still, they have, what, 3-year-old? That is out, and now it's, I don't know what they're going to do with that. Because
you can't be expected to get all your kids back. I mean, that's gonna, you're going to get, you get one, you got to be happy with that. I mean, obviously they're thrilled with the opportunity to have their own child back, but still, it's got to be still quite a struggle to not have both.
Just so glad that we found out about this story, and that it has a happy ending. And it just came over the holiday. Now, there's another one that we can make into a happy ending. This one happened in Michigan over the weekend. There is, on one of our sister stations, there was an intern. Her name is Amity Dewey. I got a note, said, Glenn, just please put her on your prayer list. And found out some more information. She's in critical condition in the hospital in Grand Rapids. She's an 18-year-old girl. She was an intern at one of our stations. And just a girl who has so much potential. She was, you know, when she was in high school, she was making, you know, constitution videos, you know, for the school and everything else. And she decided she wanted to go an intern in radio. She has been dealt a hard hand. Her father, you know, not necessarily a good guy, and kind of, you know, left her, abandoned her. So she grew up with her mom. Her mom started dating this guy who was not necessarily a good guy. And they got married 3 years ago. Amity went on a vacation during the holidays. So mom and dad were supposed to go, her stepdad and mom were supposed to go pick her up at the airport. They did. They put the luggage in the back. Halfway home, the stepdad stops the car, gets out, takes a gun, and shoots mom and the 18-year-old girl, and then himself. Mom is dead. Stepdad is dead. And she's in critical condition. Mm. She sure could use your help. She is all alone now. You can go to GoFundMe, look for Help Amity, A-M-E-D-Y, Amity Dewey and Family. Help Amity Dewey and Family. GoFundMe. Help her out. She is alone in the world now. And a good, good kid.
Glenn Beck.
Mercury.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I posted something last week on Twitter, and I normally don't talk about this stuff, but I think this is kind of important. The leader of my church died last week, and he was truly a remarkable man. And the reason why I want to bring this up is because the New York Times ran an obituary that is just is so offensive. What is an obituary? What really? What is it? It's to explain somebody's life. The obituary is to say, this is who this person was. The New York Times ran an obituary that said Thomas Monson, the president of the Mormon Church, who rebuffed demands to ordain women as priests and refused to alter church opposition to same-sex marriage, died Tuesday at 90. Is that who he was? Is that who he was? And why did he deny those things? Beckett Adams did a really good article on how the New York Times writes their obituaries. And he used the obituary of Thomas Monson last week and compared it to the New York Times obituary of Fidel Castro. Hugh Hefner really didn't talk about, you know, what Hugh Hefner did and the rapes and the horrible things that happened at the Playboy Mansion. Didn't mention any of that. Hefner created Playboy magazine and spun it into a media and entertainment industry giant. Doesn't seem like there's any controversy there. How about Fidel Castro? Fidel Castro, Cuban revolutionary who defied U.S., dies at 90. Okay, headline. Here's the obituary. Fidel Castro, the fiery apostle of revolution, who brought the Cold War to the Western Hemisphere in 1959 and then defied the United States for nearly half a century as Cuba's maximum leader, bedeviling 11 American presidents and briefly pushing the world to the brink of nuclear war, died on Friday. It continued, claiming the Castro era was one of medical advances. Excuse me? He improved education and healthcare for many Cubans. Admirers from around the world, including some Americans, were impressed with the way that healthcare and literacy in Cuba had improved. Okay. How about the 78,000 people that died trying to flee him? How about that one? How about the 5,300 known to have lost their lives fighting against communism? How about that one? Thomas S. Monson, who is the president of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints since 2008, enlarged the ranks of female missionaries but rebuffed demands to ordain women as priests and refused to alter church opposition to same-sex marriage, died on Tuesday at his home in Salt Lake City. He was 90. I'm tired of the bigotry on all people of faith, no matter what faith it is. I'm tired of it. Let me tell you who Thomas Monson was. Thomas Monson was a man that served people over himself and really over institutions. There are many stories of him going to some important thing where he's going to be, you know, the main guy that everybody wants to see. And he doesn't show up because halfway there, he found out that there was a woman whose husband had died, was at the hospital and alone. Somebody who was dying themselves that didn't have anybody to hold their hand through the process. He put nothing in front of people. Nothing. I met him once. He was not impressed. I was at a room. It was for a funeral. And my friend's daughter had died. And Thomas Monson walked in, and this was a important funeral. Anybody who was anybody was there. It was a room full of senators and congressmen, and I think the governor was there. Everybody was there. And before the funeral, we all met in this room with the casket, and it was open. And everybody knew Thomas Monson in this group except me. And so everybody was like, oh, have you met the president of the church? I said, no. Oh, you got to meet him. He's such a great guy, blah, blah, blah. So everybody kind of was like, you know, besides the funeral, you know, it was a big moment for us to meet him. And I stood there with my wife. And he came in and he just said hi quickly to everybody. It was no glad handling at all of anybody. And then he came up to me and he looked me in the eye and he said, nice to meet you. But it was so brief because standing next to my wife were these children. And they were probably 7, 6, 7, 8 years old. Here's this 87-year-old man. He just looks at me and gives me a quick handshake. Nice to meet you. And he's not even finished with nice to meet you or me saying nice to meet you. And he's looking at these children. And he gets down on one knee. And he begins to talk to these children. His whole countenance changed. And he got down on his knees so he was eye level with them. And he said, how are you doing? What's happening? So what do you want to do when you grow up? What's going to happen here? And he talked to children in a way that I had never heard before. And I thought to myself, he is childlike. He can work in this world. But he has not lost that. He was more interested in the children than he was of anybody important. Then he stood up and he took my friend by the hand. And he stood in front of the coffin. And I listened to him. And he comforted my friend in a way I have never heard before. He talked about her beauty and her soul and how her pain was over. And he spoke with such a surety that I knew he knew where she was. Shame on the New York Times. An obituary is to tell us who that person was. You focused on the political. Shame on you. And to those who loved Thomas Monson as I did, happy day. He is finally reunited with his wife, and there was a celebration, as there will be, hopefully, when all of us return. There was a celebration. He is home, and I know it, because I know he returned to his Father in heaven like a child.
Glenn Beck.
So I went to, it was my 18th anniversary.
Fancy dinner.
No, we went to On the Border.
On the Tex-Mex?
Yeah, went to On the Border.
I mean, delicious chips and queso, I'll give you, but
and
still.
Had that, and then had it with our whole family, all the kids.
The kids
yeah.
were
yeah.
there at the anniversary dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Tex-Mex restaurant.
Yes, and then we went
to the chain Tex-Mex restaurant.
Yes, and then we went to Darkest Hour.
A movie.
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
And a movie theater.
Yes, with the whole family. And apparently of some people who listened to the program because they walked in and they were like, hey, Glenn, you're really here on your anniversary. And I'm like, yeah, yeah, yeah. But you have to go see this movie.
I really want to.
You have to go see this movie. It's better even the second time around. It was so good, so well done. And here's a really conservative guy. And the truth is being told about history. And the truth is being told about the West and what we did. And, oh, it's fantastic.
On those rare occasions where that happens, we should support those
movies.
We
should. Yeah. And not to go to support it because we should support this movie because they tried. No, this is a great movie.
And he won the Golden Globe, right?
Yes.
For Gary
Oldman.
Best
actor.
Yeah.
He nails Churchill.
I couldn't.
Really good.
I had seen the previews for it, and I saw the name Gary Oldman, but that's one of those names that, like, I know, but I don't necessarily associate with a face.
Yeah.
And then I saw him accepting the award, and then you can kind of see his face in there. You can't even tell it's the same person.
No, it's amazing. He nails it.
Oh, man.
He nails it. There's times, especially the second time I watched it, because I was really kind of watching it more technically the second time, and there are times that I was like, that's him. That is Churchill. It's amazing. He just nailed it. And it's so good. Funny, uplifting. My kids loved it. I mean, my kids don't go to movies like that. Love it. They loved it. Mm. Loved it. So anyway, and then, you know, we went home and I got Tanya.
You could stop the details of your anniversary now. You don't need to continue from here on.
I think this just says a lot about us. I got her a pie. Coconut
as
cream
a
pie.
As a present?
Like, yeah, and she just laughed. And I'm like, what? And she said, open your present. Opened it up, and it was a loaf of bread. So
you got a pie and a loaf of bread to exchange for your anniversary?
Yes. I don't know if 18 is pie and bread, but that's what it was for
us. No, it's definitely not.
Yeah, we were like, we're sick. Because next week, we're going to go very strict on our eating. The whole family is going, we're just very strict. And so I think we both had the same thing in mind of enjoy it.
Yeah, indulge now.
Indulge right now.
Before the darkest hour comes next week.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you take her to Jumanji by any chance? Was that part of the...
That was at Christmas. And we should talk about Jumanji because I went not happy. I wasn't happy about it.
To go see Jumanji.
Yeah, because I wasn't a real big fan of, I mean, and Robin Williams was hysterical. And so I wasn't real, I wasn't a fan of the first Jumanji.
I don't think most people were.
And the second one, I'm like, okay, it's got The Rock in it. And there's nothing against The Rock. He makes good movies and everything else.
I like The Rock.
I like him, but he's not like, I'm not going, oh my gosh, The Rock is in it. I've got to see that.
Right. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
I can see that, sure.
And so it was, you know, Jumanji. We loved it more,
really?
More laughs per minute than any movie I've seen in a long, long time.
I've heard good reviews of that somehow.
Really?
That's bizarre.
You have to see it. Oh. It's more laughs per minute than any movie you've seen in years. Jumanji.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.